Excellent. Just wait for the last few people to come into the room. Right. Thank you for coming. I know there's two types of people that come to these last sessions. People that really, really, really want to know what we've got to talk about, and people lost on the way to drinks. So can I have a hands up just really quickly? Who's got some video conferencing in their environments? Sort of what I expected. Quick hands up, who's from end users and who's from systems integrators or partners? End users first, sorry. Cool, okay, and partners? About 50-50, excellent. So my name's Dean Jessop. I'm a director at UCFX. We're a Link consulting practice. We consult, architect, deploy, support, and manage Link, just Link. We work 100% with Link and its supporting native vendor ecosystem, which we're going to talk a little bit about today. And just a bit of who we are and how we engage. We don't generally contest anything except the Link stack, so we're not in there looking for server and storage infrastructure. We don't do the telco piece, and we don't typically challenge existing software strategies. We try and really integrate. So that's us, and with that I'll move on to the prezo. So at a high level, I'm going to quickly go over what this presentation is and is not about. I'm going to do a little bit of a primer on group video conferencing and how Link differs to typical group video conferencing. After that, I'm going to stop for just a couple of questions because I want to make sure that everyone understands the differences. From there, I'm going to talk about the options for integration, and I've got a bit of a decision tree as a summary to help make a decision on what you're going to do easier. And then, of course, there's the usual obligatory resources and references, and I've got some questions or some prizes for some questions. There's three here, and they're Plantronics Voyager Legends. I've got to thank Plantronics for giving them to us to give away. I think they're worth about $270 each, so they're really good prizes. Three of them, and I'll try and just get them out to good questions. So with that, I just sort of like to overview that this is my researched and personal opinion. I do say some stuff around advantages and disadvantages of various vendors in here, so that's certainly not a slight on any of those vendors. I've put a lot of effort into verifying the current state, but this is a really fast-moving space, so it pays to stay informed. So, you know, with that, if someone's got a view that's different to me, I'm all for hearing it during the questions and certainly later on, because there's a good chance that some of it might have actually changed. We're moving really rapidly in this area. So with that, I'm going to move into what the talk's about and what it's not about. So the first couple of points are it's about informing a decision. I'm going to overview each of the best options for integration. I'm going to identify some routes with best and fastest ROI, and I'm going to overview the vendors who make these integrations possible. I'm not going to dwell on these slides, but I want to get into the meat really quickly. So what's out of band is this is not a level 300 presentation. Jeff Schwartz from Polycom over in the US did a really good prezo at the Link conference in 2014. It's available on Channel 9. Go and find it if you want to understand the technical detail around things like what video is going to do to your network and how you should manage it on the network. You will not find a better presentation than that. I'm not going to get into the codecs and the technical interoperability data. As I said, it's level 200, not 300. Adam Jacobs does this really, really well as well. So it's another Channel 9 presentation, and it's well worth a watch. I'm not going to cover Skype integration. I know some people probably want to know about Skype integration, but once again, it's a fast-moving space. Microsoft's got some announcements coming, certainly in line with next year's Link release, and I think it's probably best that we stay away from it. What I will say is it is expected that if you are calling in from Skype and you want to land on a video conferencing room, which is what we're talking about today, the experience should be relatively similar to what you would get calling in from Link onto the room. So other than that, not going to get into too much detail. We're not going to cover Link Online integration with GroupVC. I'll just quickly ask a question of the room. Who's got Link already in Office 365? Okay, so I'm not going to directly touch on how you guys integrate Office 365 with Link, but I'm happy to have a conversation afterwards. There are ways and methods. It's just that it's a bit different to traditional. So if you want to know more on that particular topic, come and see me afterwards. So just really quickly, we go through some terms I use. This presentation is focused on creating native interoperability that has 100% feature integration. So I define interoperability and native as direct connection between two platforms. So no mediating gateways, ideally, so nothing that's really changing the signaling or anything. There's a few methods that might use conference bridges to transcode. I'm calling that native because if the bridge is doing more than just interoperability, then it's got a reason to be there beyond interop. I define 100% as meaning full bidirectional interoperability on voice, video, and presence, scheduling, and content. So what we're looking for is the full outcome, and I'll explain why. Definitions really quickly. Video, I'm meaning HD video calling two-way, specifically. That's the goal here. Voice, conference quality wideband audio. We're not talking about low bandwidth stuff. We want a really nice experience. Presence, we're talking about the ability to see room availability. So that's probably more important than almost any other area because in conference rooms, you really want to see whether the rooms are available before you walk into them, especially if you're going to book them ad hoc. Scheduling, central scheduling of calls is what we're looking for. We're looking for ideally Exchange, managing the booking and technically integrating with the rooms. And content, two-way content sharing, it speaks for itself. So sharing content from Link into a conference room, back from the conference room into Link. Couple of acronyms. MCU will pop up occasionally. That's an industry or an audio-visual industry term for a multi-party conferencing unit or multi-point conferencing unit. It's effectively talking about a conference bridge. If you've all used something like the Telecom Audio Conferencing Service where you've dialed in to meet lots of people, you'll have a good idea of what an MCU does because you've been using an MCU for those calls, albeit on audio only. Group VC. Group is an industry term for a video conferencing unit for a group, as opposed to an individual solution that might be on your desktop or a personal solution that may be a dedicated appliance. VTC, VC, etc., there might be a couple of those terms. VTC broadly means video teleconferencing unit, and VC is obviously video conferencing. Why do we care? This is really, really, you're all here because you know that video is growing in your network, but I'm just going to quickly go through a couple of the factors that are going to cause it to grow more, which is why we need to care about this. So as time goes on, the age of people moving into the businesses have been becoming younger and younger. And then obviously those younger people, as they come into the businesses, again, growing up through the business. Young people grew up with video. We may not necessarily appreciate that, but they have video on almost everything they touch. They have video on Skype, they have video on Facebook, you know, video everywhere they look. They use YouTube for most of their content. For them, it's an expectation. They are confused when video is not present, right? And we really need to kind of get a handle on that as people that are a little bit older in the industry. And what's really interesting with age is that older people, as they're surrounded by more of those young people that expect and demand it, are actually becoming influenced by that. And so even the older people are starting to see the value of video and why it's there. So the next thing is ubiquity. People see video as adding value, and more devices support video, that's going to snowball. So, you know, it's an absolute snowballing effect. Culture. Corporate cultures where video is used, it gets used heavily. So if video works and you have a good experience, it's going to be its own driver, a bit like the ubiquity point. Experience. Everyone remembers what video conferencing, or generally remembers what video conferencing used to be like 5-10 years ago, and the experience was pretty bad. We're talking about good experiences here, and good experiences, once again, drive demand. So with that, I'm going to talk a little bit about the importance of the video modality and why we want to create a two-way experience between conference rooms and endpoints. Generally speaking, audio is the bedrock of a conference. It's the foundation of a good conference. If you have good audio, from there you can start to build. Content is obviously king. Every conference meeting has always had content. Whether that content was side shared, emailed out to people, pulled down from a website all at the same time and referenced, or brought to the meeting as a form of paper, content's been king in conferences since conferences have existed. And the last modality, video. You can have a love-hate relationship with video, but what's interesting is if you get audio and content right, the chances of you having a love relationship with video is much higher. And so the video modality is kind of the final piece in the puzzle, and then you get that really nice complete experience as if you were all sitting in a room together. So with that, I'm going to move into some diagrammatic stuff I've put together myself. This is a Venn diagram, if any of you know what a Venn diagram is. Effectively, what I've done is I'm showing the large circles representing each component that makes up its respective solution. So the big circle for Link is the Link stack. The bottom circle is the bottom left circle is VC, MCUs, and infrastructure. That is your existing legacy or potential legacy conferencing infrastructure. And then VC endpoints is the entire category of endpoints. Now, the overlap represents areas where native integration needs to or does take place. That makes sense. High level, the current states that exist within these boundaries, I've just plotted them, and I'll just quickly step through them. So in this little area of boundary, you've got recent infrastructure where native integration is possible. So that's a conference bridge that talks natively to Link and allows Link to allows itself to take calls from Link. In this area here, you've got recent endpoints where native integration is possible. So a good example is Link Room Systems, which we're going to cover off a bit later on. Link Room Systems talk directly to Link, but sit inside a conference room as a dedicated video conferencing endpoint. In the middle, you've got integrated environments where there's 100% Link and VC coexistence. So that's the kind of the holy grail overlap, theoretically. In there, you've got all the legacy video conferencing experiences and all of the experiences with Link, all kind of possible. Down the bottom, we've got what I call the problem, and I think a lot of you are going to be representative of this problem, and that is legacy VC deployments where there's no integration with Link, and it's really hard to do. There are some ways to achieve it, but they're not native. They generally involve gateways. Okay. Can I just really quickly check in with everyone again? Who's got a legacy conferencing environment, infrastructure and endpoints that's not talking to Link right now? Great. Okay. Excellent. Outside of those areas, just so I can really get the diagram understood by everyone, we've got the parts of the platform that don't talk to anything. So we've got out there the Link-only environments with no VC integration. So that's your existing Link deployment. That's your desktop video with Link, point-to-point, Link conferencing, all of that that doesn't have an overlap. In the bottom, we've got the legacy conference infrastructure that has no overlap with endpoints or video endpoints or Link. And a good example of that might be audio conferencing bridges. They don't generally need to talk to VC, but they do occasionally. And the other end, we've got the legacy VC endpoints. So they're point-to-point endpoints that don't have any integration with video infrastructure for multi-point or need to, for that matter. So we're going to leave those areas around the outside alone today because we're focused on the middle three. Okay. So for that, I'm just going to go into a bit of a primer on what is group video and how Link video differs to it. So typical legacy, I'll call it video conferencing, is usually more than cameras, codecs, and displays. It includes areas such as room layouts, aesthetics, environmentals, and by that I mean you're going to have a conference-focused experience in a meeting room. And that conference-focused experience might include things like audio capabilities, like specific types of microphones. That's a ceiling microphone, but there's other, obviously, tabletop microphones and so forth. And so those considerations are not really integration considerations. They're room build considerations. And so we have to think about some of those kind of things when we're doing group video conferencing. They also include content sources. A good example of content sources are Sky TV decoder or a video conference or a DVD player in the meeting room that you use to play content into the call or onto the screens that the video conferencing endpoints use. And there's also things like control units. So control units are companies like Crestron and AMX, units that sit on top of a desk that you can use to drive the room generally they drive more than just the video conferencing. They drive the lights and they drive the blinds up and down and they make the room suitable for a call. So we're not going to dwell on this slide, and I don't expect you to read it, but I want everyone to be aware that legacy video conferencing typically has significant implementation variations depending on the size, shape, requirements, configuration of the room. Some of you won't have experienced this before because it's typical to see this handled by the facilities department, not the IT department, especially in large businesses. This list isn't authoritative, but it is representative of some of the many environments you might encounter when trying to make Link communicate with your group conferencing. I talk really high level about immersive. This is one of those really good exceptions to the rule. It's typically a immersive telepresence or immersive video conferencing is typically a point-to-point only experience. It's not dead. You'll read a lot of articles about how telepresence is dead or immersive telepresence is dying. It's not. It's still a very good solution for some scenarios. Long meetings, they're the ones that you're getting screen burn if you're looking at a regular screen for an 8-hour period. You've got to have something a bit more pleasant to be in from an environment point of view. They're good for large meetings where you can't fit them in a regular meeting room. You want to get everyone on the screen, so you need a really big room for that. And they're good for VIP meetings. So that's your C-level staff who don't feel they can replace face-to-face meetings with video because they're looking for facial reactions in people. They're looking for experiences that you generally can't get through video conferencing. And so telepresence generally will allay some of their concerns and certainly addresses that face-to-face need. They can be cost prohibitive. The old story that a telepresence suite costs $1 million isn't true anymore, but a really good one can still cost $500,000. And an entry level one, is still going to be up around the $100,000. This once again is a fast moving space, and there is things coming in that space that potentially drive the cost down for immersive telepresence. But be aware, it probably isn't going to go away. And if you're a large business with lots of locations, it's definitely not going to go away from a need point of view. So I just want to talk really quickly about why this is relevant to Link. That's a room from a picture from a certain large New Zealand dairy giant. This is an Auckland-based location, and it's fully integrated with Microsoft Link. So that immersive telepresence suite can call a Link endpoint, and a Link endpoint can call it, and they can also join conferences together. So it's relevant. It's not just relevant to the industry. It's relevant to us here in New Zealand. This is a suite from a certain large New Zealand brewing organisation, who, once again, it's integrated 100% with Link. And they use it for calling back and forth with Link. They use it for point-to-point calls with Australia. And it certainly helps remove the tyranny of distance that we feel when we travel away from New Zealand. So certainly relevant to Link integration, telepresence. So I'm just going to talk a little bit about the difference in experience that you get between video conferencing and Link. So the Link Gallery View is something that you're probably all familiar with. If you don't have Link, you will have at least seen it in the Microsoft material or in some of the other presentations. It's that view. It's how you see other people when you're in a call. Typically, it is generally up to 5 panoramic streams. So it sits horizontal across the whole screen. There's 5 that are active. And underneath, there's a standing row that's people that are actually visible and moving, and beneath that there's effectively a sitting row, and those people are the ones along the bottom here that are pictures only. So they're not active video participants, but they're there, and they're there to represent the fact that they're in the call. Okay, you have the ability to pin them. You can choose one of these and put them up there and pin them, or you can choose one of these and pin them here, and they'll stay there. So generally speaking, in the Link experience, the last person to speak is on the screen, or the last 5 people to speak are on the active, unless you've pinned one, in which case they're always there. You have a spotlight to lock video on one person. With the spotlight, you can choose a person, you can give them more real estate on the screen. I haven't shown that here in the picture, but it's a functionality of the Link conference experience. And there's some additional additional features in the Link meeting experience. So there's participant rosters, there's presenter mute and unmute controls. So as someone who's controlling the meeting, I can mute and unmute specific people at the other end. And there's, of course, in-meeting instant messaging and presence. So you can actually see the availability of everyone. You can send them messages, you can send the group inside the conference messages, etc. So now we're going to look at how traditional video infrastructure handles multi-point calls, because it is a little bit different in general. You can generally have about up to 16 plus streams on screen. So in the industry, this is called continuous presence, otherwise known as Brady Bunch or Celebrity Squares view. It's very common, and it's generally considered to be desirable by people that currently have this experience. It's something that people find a little bit disconcerting when they move to Link and they no longer see it. And so we're going to talk a little bit about how you can keep that experience. There's customized layout solutions. Sometimes they're administrative controlled. So by that, what we mean is the presenter may not have the same level of control as they do in Link meeting. So the presenter is kind of a participant as well. And the reason for that is because meeting management services are sometimes needed for large organizations. Big deployments involve big video network operations teams often. And those video network operations team are dedicated resources responsible for setting layouts, booking meetings, managing the experience, and so forth. So it's quite a different experience to Link, which is quite ad hoc and managed more by the traditional systems integration team inside the business, or traditional support services inside the business. Content. This is a really important area to understand. We spend quite a bit of time on it. There's some differences in the way content's handled. Traditional room system environments use H239 or binary floor control protocol. They're legacy standards that have been around for quite a while. They allow for primarily streamed content effectively. It's treated like another video stream, so it's not active. You generally can't dig into it and control it at the far end. Link content's handled via a remote desktop protocol, PSOM and HTML5. They're quite active protocols. You can really dig in and take control of the far end. You have a lot more control over what goes on. And certainly with a web app server, you can upload content to it and run PowerPoint presentations directly off a central environment. You know, so it's quite a different approach to the way legacy handles content. That difference makes content integration quite difficult because it's handled very differently. So just quickly on content, content delivery, effectively in legacy it's quite common to see broadcast content that one person is presenting and everyone else doesn't have a picture of the, everyone else is just receiving content and they don't share their content back. They never even need to respond, if you will. And that's used in things like CEO broadcasts to all the conference rooms in an organisation. Once again, quite a common experience. I think Link can be configured to do that, but it's much more common in legacy VC environments. And then obviously the Link experience is quite different as well from a content delivery point of view. With web app server, you can do just about anything. You can upload PowerPoint presentations to your whiteboards, you've got polls, you've got OneNote sharing annotations, all built into the platform. You typically don't have any of that in legacy view. So we'll talk a little bit about bridging the content gap. There's a bunch of different ways, and we're going to dig into how we do that. There's a thing called RDP transcoding, which effectively takes remote desktop protocol, turns it into legacy 239 or BFCP, and then streams it to the legacy environments. That's done on a conference bridge, and it's resource intensive. It requires some processing power to achieve it, and it typically sits inside third-party VC conferencing. There's native BFCP content via Link client add-ons. So what this is a plugin for the Link client for the PC. And on the plugin, it actually hijacks the remote desktop protocol, turns it into BFCP, and sends it directly out to the legacy endpoints and if it's in a legacy call, generally it recognises that and shares it accordingly as BFCP. If it's in a Link call, the plugin will recognise that and just share it as regular Link content. So that's one method. You're out of band. This is what most of you are probably doing right now. You go into your meeting room, you sit down, you set up a video conferencing call, you then proceed to open up your laptop, you turn Link on, you get everyone who's in the other video conferencing rooms to join Link, and you use Link to share content. Right, so out of band content presentation. It's It's a bit messy, it's kind of hard to understand for the users, but still very, very common right now. We'd like to try and get away from that ideally. There's Loop Room System natively supporting current link content modalities. So there are dedicated endpoints that we'll talk about that can go inside meeting rooms, and they will share content into link as if they're a link endpoint, and you can have all the same levels of control that you would normally have from a regular link client. Just a couple of considerations before we move off the differences, the high-level differences between the two platforms. It pays to choose the right Link 2013 interoperability solution because obviously there's lots of different ways of achieving it, and some of them will be relevant to some organisations and some of them won't to others. There's certainly other factors in play. Be aware that when you build a conference room, you don't just throw a PC in it generally. You typically need to integrate the environment to be suitable for video conferencing. That means lighting, that means a good acoustics in the room, it means all of those usual considerations. And alignment is really important because of that. So in group video conferencing, you will generally need your facilities department's permission to build something into the room. And so being aware of different departments' requirements becomes really, really important in that space. So with that, I'm just going to pause for a second. I want to just take a couple of questions from the room on the differences. I'm obviously going to talk about some options, but I'm keen to just make sure that everyone understands what we've just covered. Yeah, so that's a really good question, and I mean, we're going to cover it really well in the next section of the presentation. But just a quick question for you. Do you have Link right now, Microsoft Link? Okay. Okay, rightio. Yeah, so look, we'll definitely touch on how. And I mean, certainly it sounds like you've got more at stake than the average person doing this integration. So there may not be enough detail in this for you. So it's well worthwhile us catching up afterwards to make sure that we understand exactly what you need so I can give you the right advice. Make sense? Any other questions? No? We're all good? Perfect. Let's move on. So I'm going to talk about the main options for interoperability. First one's via a third-party multi-party conferencing unit. Effectively, you've got the advantages of all of those things we talked about before around telepresence, continuous presence, all of that stuff. So in this model, effectively what you're doing is you're building an environment that Link is able to connect to, right? So Link is a guest on the conferencing environment. That can now be done natively, so there's no need for gateways or anything in the middle, and there are options we'll talk about that allow for full content sharing, the whole lot. That will involve some investment in third-party conferencing infrastructure or some upgrading of existing third-party conferencing infrastructure if what you have is compatible. Your Link Room System, that's the one that sat in the bottom right part of the integration circle. These are a new concept on the whole grand scheme of things. They're about a year old, give or take. They've been relatively heavily talked about, and they are effectively video conferencing units, full group video conferencing units, screens, control panel, the lot, that talk natively to Microsoft Link and are in essence Link endpoints. Okay, so we're going to go through the options of those in a minute. There's interoperability via a third-party gateway. Now, I don't want to talk about this, and I'm not going to spend any time on it, but just be aware that it does exist. What I mean by this is there are some options you can go and purchase that are effectively video border proxies or edge gateway router-type devices that will transcode the signaling between legacy and other solutions. What they don't typically do is they don't typically translate the media or transcode the media. The media gets sent point to point, and only media that is compatible or interoperable. And that's generally just the video stream. So these solutions don't generally give content. They often don't give presence. And so we're just going to sort of stay away from them a little bit because I think they're a little bit ugly, to be honest. The other key point on them is they cost about the same amount as buying an interoperable conference platform. So therefore, if you don't have one, why would you bother? Interoperably built into Link. This is public domain, though generally only talked about by people who really know what's going on. There's a couple of blogs that are out there that I can refer you to. Next year, Link is going to put an effectively interoperability license on the front end. They're going to call it the Video Interoperability Server, or VIS. It's going to have some limitations day one, and it's certainly not till next year, so I think if you've got an urgent need, it's worth looking at now. It's been declared as phase one supporting Cisco Tanberg, but from what we understand, there isn't going to be content either. So the advantage is it'll run on the Link platform and it will talk to legacy endpoints, but it won't necessarily fit the picture we're talking about of 100% native interoperability out of the box. But it's a nice signal that there's some changes coming in this direction, and Link is, well, Microsoft is really committed to addressing this. So with that, we're going to shift the focus to the two main methods that are available right now and work at 100%, and we'll talk about these in some detail. So you remember this slide? It's the one that focuses on the boundaries, where integration is possible. I've taken away the bits we don't care about. They're the ones that don't talk to anything else around the edges. And I'm going to just quickly go through and explain some vendors that have solutions that fit into each of the areas. Once again, I'm going to point out this is my opinion, and if someone has a different view, you know, it's a fast-moving place, and I'm really keen to hear it. Right. So I'm going to first talk about what I call the problem. The odds are if you have one of these three vendors in your network, you'll have the problem we're talking about, the lack of interoperability. There is some stuff in life size, but it fits more into the category of gateways, and I don't know of very many deployments involved in using it in the region. Cisco is, by and large, the number one problem. New Zealand market's about 35% Cisco in the video conferencing terms. Australia is about 70% Cisco, so the problem's worse for our friends over the ditch. In New Zealand, I think there's about 60, 65% market share to Polycom, so it's a different proposition. These must use gateways and or some kind of interoperability platform, which is what we're going to talk about in this area here. So there's some MCUs that support both Link and legacy standards. These two companies are new. You aren't unlikely to have heard of them unless you've been doing lots of Googling. They're Arcano and Pexip. We're going to talk a little bit about some of their solution benefits and advantages. On the other side, we've got the list of LRS-based or PC-based native Link endpoint options. So there's three main vendors in that space. One's not up, and I'll explain why in a second. Crestron Smart are the two main LRS manufacturers, or Link Room System manufacturers, plus one other. Vadio is a camera manufacturer. They make USB-connected cameras that work really nicely with Link. And Logitech. Most of you have probably seen a Logitech camera. It's kind of the standard now in meeting rooms Link for video, getting video into your appliance or into your PC. Now, the one that's glaringly missing from those three boxes at the top, that one, two, and three, is the only one that I'm aware of, and being that my previous role was with this company, I do declare that this is opinion, and I'd love to be seen wrong, be proven wrong, that's Polycom. Polycom is the only one I'm aware of that has both legacy solutions, VCN points, MCUs and infrastructure, does the full telepresence all the way down to personal desktop solutions, and has everything in between, but is also natively interoperable with Link across the whole platform. So I've got them in the middle. Now, I'm not going to say go rush out and buy Polycom. That's the solution for you. I've got a decision tree later on that will help drive you in that direction or not. There are some limitations with the Polycom solution, like there are with all of them, and so we're just going to kind of go through them all. It's just as far as this Venn diagram fits, they're the only one in the middle. Interoperability platforms, or MCUs. So we're talking about Polycom Real Presence, Arcano, and Pexip. And for good measure, I'm going to throw a solution on the end there called Cloud-Based Interoperability as a Service. That's for all you people who really don't care what the vendor name is, just want an outcome. Okay. So Polycom Real Presence, there's some key advantages to their platform. They're available as appliance or virtualized. The full call control is really important, scheduling and management. All that's integrated with Exchange and Outlook. So you're going to get a really nice booking experience. And there's a little video that shows some of the interop experience I've got next. They support telepresence, which is really key if you have a need for telepresence, and lots of conference layouts. So that continuous presence view I showed before, Brady Bunch, Sudbury Squares, they've got lots of different variations of that. There's a huge range of endpoints with 100% feature support. They literally are interoperable on every endpoint now. So what I mean by that is the Polycom immersive telepresence suites have a Link license on them that allows it to call directly into the Link platform. Now, caveat, you're not going to get content at the moment unless you do the content through sideband with that native interoperability. So we'll talk about ways of achieving that in a minute. You have a huge range of endpoints with 100%, subscription service of one or a one-off purchase. So what I mean by that is you can buy the solution one-off, or you can go to an integrator and say, I want to pay for this on an annual basis or maybe even a monthly basis, depending on your commercial needs. And it's available as a subscription service. You can purchase the ports in the conference bridge as you need them, increase the amount as you need them, decrease the amount as you need them, which is reasonably important because we know that Link is going to ultimately do something in this space. We're not quite sure how soon and we're not quite sure how good, but eventually it will get there. And a subscription service is kind of nice because over the next three-year life, as that changes, you could potentially wind the cost back or the ports back. It's not something to be sneezed at. Supports legacy signaling. That's really important. I haven't talked about signaling. I mentioned that there's some presentations you can go and see to talk about the differences in signaling. But what I will say is H33 is the main legacy standard. It's quite common in New Zealand. It's a signaling alternative to SIP, if you know what SIP is. And it's worth understanding that any interoperability platform really should support legacy signaling. Otherwise, it's not going to be 100% interoperable with all the other solutions that are out there. Its integration is really good. These guys have been doing Link integration since Link integration existed. Obviously, if you use the conference platform and you use their whole suite, you've got content integration. One exception being if you only have Polycom endpoints talking to a Link platform, you probably won't have content for now. I say for now because they tell me there's something coming. Okay. Some disadvantages. It is a complex install process. You do need a partner who knows what they're doing. You do not go and buy this platform and try and install it yourself. It's not going to happen. Even the best get tangled up with some of this stuff. I think there's about six or seven elements involved, and they all do need to be configured to work together. So that's a reasonable disadvantage. Content sharing is currently via a Link client plugin. So I mentioned that method where there's a sideloaded plugin. So if you don't have control of your desktop build, the solution might not suit your requirements from a content point of view, if you don't control your desktop build. If you do control your desktop build, you just put it into the distribution along with the application distribution along with the Link client, and you'll be fine. Just going to really quickly, I'm running on time nicely, so I'm going to really quickly play a little two-minute video here.
Polycom Real Presence Platform and Polycom Real Connect for Microsoft Link offers the best user experience that is easy to use to bring everyone together for video collaboration. A meeting organizer schedules a new video meeting on Microsoft Outlook and Link enables it. As long as an audio dial-in is configured for the meeting organizer's Link account, conference ID will be automatically included in the meeting invite along with the hyperlink to click to join. Once the invite is sent, a Link user can join the meeting by clicking the hyperlink inside of the meeting invite. The call is hosted on the Link conferencing server at this point. Likewise, other Link users join the call by clicking the hyperlink that's in the Outlook invite or calendar shown on the Link client itself. Link conferencing server connects all Link users and sends up to 5 live streams. This layout is called Gallery View. For video conferencing users, they are familiar with joining a meeting by dialing a conference ID number. With Polycom Real Connect, nothing has changed. Simply dial the conference ID that is included in the meeting invite. The Real Presence platform handles the rest transparently at the back end, and the meeting is cascaded between Link MCU and the collaboration server. As for the user experience, even the video layout remains unchanged. Video conferencing users see the multipoint layout sent from the collaboration server. Up to 5 video streams are sent to the collaboration server and displayed in the squares. The collaboration server sends active speaker that has joined on the VMR to the Link MCU, which will be displayed in the gallery view. Polycom Real Connect supports content sharing between video room participants and Link clients on the Link MCU side as well, so every participant gets the full collaboration experience, including voice, video, and content share. And since the content sharing suite allows audio-only participants to access the content via a web browser, everyone can expect great collaboration together.
So I just thought I'd show that because it actually explains what is possible now far better than I could do overview. So I'll just talk really quickly about the Arcano platform. This is an alternative. They don't make endpoints, but they do sit in the interoperability space with infrastructure. They've got some great advantages. They're up there on the screen. Single box is probably really a good advantage. It means it's not that difficult to install. It's available as a virtual machine or as an appliance. And it has two roles, like an edge role and a core role or a conferencing platform role, but they both live on the same platform. So it's really easy to install. There's some integration requirements. It's native for transcoding of content. So that means that there's no plugin, there's no anything else. You call in, you share content, and out the other end to the link client comes content, or out the other end to the video legacy client comes content. It's quite a nice solution. Some disadvantages, and these are reasonably big disadvantages, so I throw them up. There is no call control. That means that if you have legacy conferencing endpoints, you will still need to have some kind of video content management tool. So if you have Cisco endpoints, you'll need a VCSC in the network still. If you have Polycom ones, you'll probably still need a gatekeeper of some sort. It doesn't support legacy H33. You've got to put another box in from a different vendor to get that legacy signaling. And it's a fairly new product, so the channel for support's a bit thin on the ground, although we've played with it a fair bit and we've got a good handle on it now. Pexip's another one in this space. They are just massive from a transcoding content point of view. They support pretty much every kind of standard you can imagine. 3.2.3, VP8, VP9. VP8 and VP9 are the Google Hangout standards. So there isn't direct integration with Google Hangout at the moment, but they're talking about it coming in the future because they support the codecs. Obviously, it's reasonably low cost. It is 100% virtualized. There is no appliance, which might be an advantage or a disadvantage depending on your respective network. But it does have a WebRTC client like Arcano. Unlike Arcano, which you buy out of the box, you purchase and then you pay for maintenance, Pexip's primarily a subscription pricing model. So once again, kind of an advantage or disadvantage depending on your environment and commercial constructs. Generally, you do need a video border proxy for edge services because there's a few reasons for that. I won't get into the technical, but it does mean another box if you want to do interoperability with people's endpoints that are not inside your network for calling in. And once again, fairly new product, fairly new channel model, some risks attached to that, especially out here in New Zealand. Interoperability as a service. I talk about this really high level. I'm just going to skip through them really quickly. There's BlueJeans, which most of you have probably heard of before. They're in Australia. There's a platform over there. I'm not a fan, honestly. I'm not a fan of any high bandwidth, latency-dependent service being served out of anywhere except New Zealand. It may suit your needs if you're a small organisation and you've got very specific requirements and you can accept some of the possible risks of having that platform overseas. Talk to us. We've built Interoperability as a service already. We know our way around it. If you don't want to own the platform, we're happy to have a conversation about that and host it up in a data centre for you. There's several local Polycom platform as a service providers. I won't name them, there's two or three. But if you do need Interoperability as a service, you can go to these guys. The catch is I'm not 100% certain, but I haven't seen any of them offering the content interoperability yet. It's mainly because the plugin for the Polycom platform needs to be on network, effectively. Really quickly, I'm going to go over the Link Room System options. I think there's some LRS units in Auckland floating around that you can see quite easily with Smart, Polycom and Crestron. Microsoft have got one in their office. There is a video here that I'm going to skip in order of time. Just jump onto YouTube and type Link Room Systems Link Knows, and there's a nice little 2-minute video that overviews them. I'm just going to skip through it really quickly, if that's okay. So we can talk about the endpoint options and have time for questions. So Polycom's the first manufacturer in the Link Room System space. Crestron's the second. Smart Technologies is the third. Let's have a look at them. Oh, and then, of course, what to do if you can't afford LRS, which I think is reasonably important. Polycom has some advantages. They have lots of cameras. They've done some really neat work making their legacy camera options compatible with LRS. They make a camera that plugs into the LRS unit, which is a round table view, which is really neat. If you haven't seen it, go and have a look at some of the stands out there in the main area, because there's both Polycom and our stand has got this round table camera on it. Gives a real cool, neat round panoramic view, stretches it out into a layout across the bottom, and allows you to see everyone in the room on a flat panel, which is really nice. They're really quick. They're SSD disk in them, so they boot really fast. They reboot really fast if there's a problem. Some advantages there. They're really customizable. Touchscreens, not touchscreens. You know, you can really configure it as you want because it doesn't ship with panels. You can buy panels from them, but you can also connect it to panels of your own. And there's a built-in room control panel as part of the solution. And when I say built-in room control, it's actually got a Crestron, and one of the disadvantages I talk about is an OEM product from Crestron, except the cameras. The disadvantage, because they're not in complete control of their supply chain, you never really know what happens in those scenarios, but they've got some really good relationships with Crestron, and they've had some really long relationships in telepresence, so that may be not a big disadvantage. That room control panel will control your lights, your blinds, the whole lot, which is kind of cool. Means you don't have to have two panels. It means it kind of addresses that solution. But like all Link room systems, it's going to be expensive. Be prepared to fall off your seat. They honestly start about $20,000 a room. Okay? And I just call that out. Crestron's very similar to Polycom in that it has most of the same advantages and disadvantages. You'll note one, if I go back to there, one difference is I've got Polycom down as having a solid global channel. It's because the people selling Polycom LRSs have been doing video conferencing for 15 years, so they know their way around all the other considerations. The Crestron guys, they know their way around the room integration, but they don't know their way around the infrastructure generally. So I think that the Crestron channel's got a bit of a disadvantage. Otherwise, they're effectively the same solution, being honest. But at the end of the day, I would lean towards the Polycom one simply because of the support options. Smart technologies. This is interesting. If you've seen a smart interactive whiteboard before, they allow you to collaborate on content, and they're quite common education for replacing whiteboards. So what they've done is they've built an LRS into a smart interactive whiteboard. That's got some really good advantages. If you need the interactive whiteboard, you kind of get a discount on it as you buy it as part of the solution. The disadvantage is if you don't need it, you've got to pay for it because they don't ship them without it. Right, so what I haven't put up on here, I learned actually a little bit earlier on today, so there's always learning, is that there's also a problem in that the main board or the PC that controls the LRS is built into the screen, so if there's a problem with the motherboard, you might have to ship the whole unit. Right? It is possible to just change the unit out, but it is a job for an installer, and it really depends on whether there's an installer nearby you. Okay. Last one I saw was quite slow to boot. I'm hoping they'll fix that. And no doubt after this goes up online, I'll get an email saying, Dean Jessup, we fixed that. They had spinning disk in them, and they were really slow to boot, and they were really slow to reboot, which was a bit of a disadvantage. The big one is their channel is really experienced in education. So if you are a tertiary, that's going to be in the advantage category. If you're not a tertiary, their channel's not super experienced outside of that field. The DIY stuff, really quickly. I have two options here. I'm just going to go back and forth between them, and I don't think we need to go through all the points because I want to get to questions. But I've got camera, screen, and microphone only, and I've got DIY PC-based. The biggest difference here is in the PC-based, you put a dedicated appliance PC in, and you run the Link client on it. It has some disadvantages in that the interface, the Link 2013 interface, is fiddly. I call it the jello factor. Can't explain it, but I've seen it, and lots of people have told me about it. And that is that someone who's very competent at operating the Link 2013 client on their desktop PC, it has no problems with it whatsoever. The minute you put them in a meeting room environment while there's 10, 5, however many people waiting for them, trying to operate that client on a big screen turns into jello. They just melt. It's embarrassing, but it's quite common. So I have a lot of cautions around this, but there is some changes happening in this space. Wouldn't mind having a conversation if you are interested in doing this and you can't afford LRS. We have built some of these for clients, and we really do know how to tailor it down and make it a suitable solution. We also have some stuff coming that might fix that interface downstream, but I'd like to have a chat about that individually rather than to the whole group. The camera option, this works in one scenario. If you're a 100% laptop and your users are savvy, so they're reasonably technically savvy users, and you've got a good training program in place, having touch screens and cameras with a USB connection sitting on the table for them to come in and plug into can work really well. It can also work dismally if you don't have 100% PC and you're not technically savvy as an organisation. So just be cautious around that. Once again, you can easily give advice on that. So finally, I promised a decision tree. I'm not going to dwell on this for too long because, as I said, I've got 10 minutes left and I want to have some questions. But effectively, what I've done is I've said, you've got some questions around how do you get to the outcome, how do you choose which one's best for you, and I've tried to walk everyone through it. What I will say is, once again, this is my opinion. It is subject to changing sands because this industry is fast moving. Just high level explaining it, the blue is a decision. Sorry for the process junkies, or those people with OCD. I couldn't make them diamonds. It just didn't work on the thing very well. It took me 5 hours to figure that out, so I'm just a little bit OCD. But the green is a good outcome. That's a solution that's going to give you 100% native interoperability, ideally, or fit your needs. The grey is a questionable outcome. When I say questionable, I mean someone inside your organisation might say, we could do this a different way, and they would probably be right, but that would probably be sacrificing the content integration I was talking about, because it'll be a gateway or something like that. And the red is a contentious decision. Someone's going to say to you, why are we putting this investment in the bin when you get to the red? Hopefully this decision tree will help you justify that decision. So just really quickly running through it. I'm not going to talk to it because these slides are published, and you can go away and have a read. The first question is obviously, do you have video conferencing or don't you have video conferencing? We're going to go down the we have group conferencing already route first. Is it newer than 5 years old or older than 5 years old? If it's newer, the next question is, are you endpoints only or do you have full infrastructure? So we'll just have a quick look down the full infrastructure. Do you have a Polycom, Arcano or Pexip platform? By now you all know why. If the answer is yes, upgrade it. What's your problem? If it's newer than 5 years old and it's a Polycom platform, it's probably going to be able to be upgraded to Real Presence, the Real Presence platform or Real Presence 1, and you'll probably get that experience. Now, I say probably because everyone's experience is a little bit different and this is high level. No, it's not any of those. It's probably a Cisco platform or a RadVision platform that Avaya now owns. Bin the platform and refer to endpoints is what I suggest. A little bit contentious, but there's some good reasons why, and that is that the third-party gateways that support those platforms cost almost as much as replacing it with an Arcano, Pexip, or Polycom platform. So with that, we're going to refer over to the endpoints. Yes, alternate path. So is it Polycom, HDX, or Group Series? If the answer is yes, you can put a link license on the endpoint and connect directly to link. You don't need the infrastructure. You don't need the platform. You won't have content at the moment. So I have it grey because it's a bit questionable. If they had content support on the endpoints, that'd be a green option. No, you don't have Polycom. Do you have four or more room endpoints? Average install price for a room, and I say average because the range is huge, is about $6,000, give or take. And generally speaking, from there, you've got some choices. If you don't have four or more endpoints, head down the are you happy with cloud services? Do you have adequate internet bandwidth to support cloud services? The answer is yes, interoperability of services is your outcome. If the answer is no, contentious decision, throw those three endpoints you have in the bin and go and buy something brand new because it's going to be cheaper in the long run. If the other one is, the answer is yes to the you have four or more endpoints, you've got two choices. Do you like cloud services? Great, interoperability as a service. Do you not like cloud services or don't they work in your organisation? Install a platform, one of the three we talked about. Finally, if the current solution is older than 5 years, you've got two slightly contentious decisions, or one very and one not. It depends on your organisation how they sweat assets. This is not a hard five-year line either, by the way, so that's why I ask, are the endpoints HD and do they use H.264? That's a standard. I won't explain what it means, but if the answer to that is yes, then you can put the infrastructure in the bin and you can probably hit the endpoints. Refer to, I have endpoints only. Okay? If the answer is no, put the whole lot in the bin and go to refer, we don't have conferencing. It's cheaper. It'll save you hassle. Don't sweat an asset older than 5 years that doesn't support HD. It just is not worth it. And that's strong advice from deep experience. The category that says we don't have video conferencing. It's a pretty easy decision, actually. Do you have adequate, if you have adequate internet bandwidth and prefer cloud services, interoperability as a service, buy whatever endpoints you like, and away you go. If you are happy with just the Link Gallery experience, so you don't need continuous presence or all the other advantages with a legacy or a third-party platform, and you're happy with that gallery view that we talked about earlier on, then ask yourself, do you want those features or not? If you don't, go down the LRS path. If you do, go to the interoperability platform or consume it as a service. Yes, I want LRS. Or do I have the budget for it? Right. Fair question, because they're not cheap. Great experience, really expensive. If you have the budget, ask yourself, do you need room automation? So lights, blinds, control, all of that. If the answer is yes, Polycom or Crestron's the best outcome. If the answer is no, you can add Smart into the mix as an option. Obviously, if you need to ask yourself a question I haven't got on here, do I need Smart Interactive Whiteboards beyond simply touchscreens, which are supported by the others, then you might weight Smart higher in that decision. Just use a bit of common sense around that. If the answer is no, laptops and tech savvy, deploy cameras. If they're not, have a chat to us about trying to put together a PC-based experience. I won't talk high level about this, but just remember, interoperability is not conferencing. If you use a third-party platform, you'll have to right-size the platform accordingly. Don't forget about audio conferencing. You're probably doing it on Link if you have Link, the audio conferencing, but you may not be. Don't forget about it. Obviously, the solution doesn't work very well without it. Microphones in the rooms, don't forget about those. They are critical. That's the experience. That's the send of sound. Send of sound, bedrock, foundation. Don't get it wrong. Touchscreens versus no touch, it's a really easy decision. Do you need to collaborate on the content up at the front? Yes or no? If the answer is no, maybe you don't need touchscreens. Most of the solutions can be driven from the table. Well, that's me. I mentioned some content. It's in the slide deck. Download it. Adam Jacobs and Dustin Hannafin do the video interoperable stuff, the codec Deep 300. And Jeff Schertz does the what on earth are you doing to my network, which is a pretty good presentation for what getting this right will actually cost you in the underlying network layer, which I haven't talked about. That's me, and with that, let's get past that obligatory slide. Questions? We have 3 minutes. Sorry. A low end and a high end. It's a fair question. There is a cut point for that. It depends on the LRS you buy. The biggest LRSs go on 84-inch panels, so that's a pretty big room, especially two of them. So it's a functional limit on the camera. They will do big boardroom tables, and there are camera options for round rooms, so probably not. You could probably build a solution for... You could put LRS on a 20-inch or a 24-inch screen for one person if you wanted to. I'm not advising that. That's desktop conferencing. But there isn't a bottom-end limit to how you can build them because you do buy the Crestron and Polycom ones without screens. Okay?
How do you handle session recording and playback?
Good question. Two main routes. There's the Link recording built into Link. There's some hang-ups or not hang-ups on that. And then there's a whole bunch of legacy recording options that integrate with the third-party platforms. There is a thing called the Polycom RSS. It's a streaming recording server. I think it talks directly to Link. It'll do both Link sessions and native sessions. But that's just one of maybe five or six pretty good solutions in that space. I can talk to you about it later on if you'd like. Depending on the solution, you might still need that VBP. As I said, the Arcano platform and the Pexip platform both really require a VBP to work properly with external endpoints, so it may not be a write-off. But if you need to upgrade that VBP and you're out of maintenance, the chances are there's some risks around that, and those risks might cost as much as just simply replacing it with something new. Maybe. It depends on the people. There is so it's a little bit out of band for this because at the far end they're probably not going to have video conferencing. They won't be in a room. But I would certainly say that the web app, the Link web app, is very easy to use. If you've used it before, it's very easy to use. And I'd probably lean that way over Skype at the moment. But like, without getting into too much detail, this time next year, it might be an arbitrary question, put it that way. No, on legacy, once it's converted to BFCP or 239, there's no control. It's passive view receiving it. You can't really do anything with it. If you use LRS, then yes, you do have the ability to dive into the content and control it like normal. That's a good question. You can. What sort of reporting features? So the simple answer to reporting is Link platform, but it really depends on how you do the integration, because you may end up doing reporting on the third-party platform, in which case there are loads of tools. It's a really big area, so I'm not going to get into it in too much detail, but I would recommend the Link analytics. If you've done the integration and the calls taking place involving a Link client, there'll be a record of it. But you may have to be a little bit clever around how you tag the endpoints as conference rooms so you can distinguish them from regular Link calls. But I can certainly, if you head to the UCFX stand, you can pose that question to one of my architects and he'll give you a deep answer.
What's the future of where Marching Scene's
going to be? It's a big question. In simple terms, everyone loves the idea of browser-based video with no plugins. Right? Everyone loves it. It's a spectacular idea. It is heavily predicated on the browsers adhering to standards. And with all the different browser manufacturers out there, and there are a lot when you get past the main three, there are risks to those standards not being adhered to and poor far-end experience. My personal view, for now, any solution that uses a plugin in a browser is probably going to be more reliable than WebRTC. Ask me the question again this time next year. Fast moving place, I might give you a different answer. They haven't stuck so far, is the answer. Chrome's awesome, Firefox is okay, Internet Explorer is great if you develop specifically for it. But really, you're going to kind of do the work on all three, is what I've observed. But I'm not a developer in WebRTC, so. But we do have two WebRTC developers in the company, so if you want to ask one of them. That's a good question, by the way. Graham, I'll give you.
You mentioned that when you're in an engagement, there's no context for the business. What's the smart time? What would be the context being that you guys have?
That's a tout for business question. In simple terms, we don't compete on any other part of the environment. We don't contest the network. We don't contest the telco. We don't tell you where to put your servers and storage. We just integrate into your current strategy as a company. So there's no right or wrong time to engage us. We can jump in right at the very beginning and help you with a consultancy. We can jump in right at the very end and help your existing integrator in a non-threatening way with where they've gotten to. We actually, as a business, we have a channel model that allows for the systems integrators in the room to sell our services at a rate that's very similar to our own. So there is no right or wrong. We jump in at any point. We're here to help. I'll give that. That's a good question. I'm going to... So just ask it again, just a little bit. No, that's a really good question. I didn't touch on security at all. So just for the recording, the question was about security. Just let me repeat it back to you. In a link to third-party interoperability call, how do you handle security and so forth? The simple answer is you encrypt the call. That's a bit of a more complicated answer, because those three platforms I talked about, Pexip, Arcano, and Polycom, they do all take a standard, my standards here are a bit bad, but I think X509 or a standards-based certificate, right? So you can install a certificate in them. They are an encrypted call. They do use TLS and so forth. So it is a secure call. You've got to turn it on, you've got to configure it, and there is more work involved in doing that, obviously. But for native integration, it is a minimum, really, to get your conference bridge certificated and integrated with your link bridge. But as I said, I'm not an architect. Head over to the stand and have a chat to one of the architects for that. But it's supportable. Correct. So I did mention in the section on the PCs, don't assume that your IT policy is going to allow you to put a PC in a meeting room and leave it logged in on an account, because my experience is most people's policy won't allow that. Right, the way around that problem is to work with an integrator to turn it into an appliance, harden it, prove to the team that it's secure, give it a dedicated resource account, and treat it accordingly. Any more questions? No? Oh yeah. I don't have any on me, but certainly over at the stand, we're the ones on the outside. But my contact details, my email address is in the deck. So go and download it from Channel 9, and presuming I didn't hash it, and it does get uploaded.
So we've got link room systems with Link Online?
Yeah, so I stayed away from that. It is supported. It does work. It is supported. It does work. I would definitely, consider checking all the usual suspects around bandwidth. So your biggest single problem is the Office 365 environment is Singapore, soon to be Sydney, okay? And it's similar to that concern I had with BlueJeans, where the latency back and forth can potentially impact HD calling and so forth. So you want to check with that. It does integrate with it. You can install it. You can configure account inside 365 as a resource account. It all works on LRS. You can call from 365 into a Polycom or a third-party bridge, or a Arcano or a Pexip, so that is possible as well, but there's questions around things like certificates and all the edge considerations that you really need to address. It's a different route to the decision, effectively. Make sense? Oh, one thing I should say, sorry, hybrid environment. It is possible to put a link instance in place just to manage the conferencing. We're building that right now for a large organisation in New Zealand. They're an Office 365 customer. They wanted conferencing LRS, and we're actually building a dedicated link environment just for the LRS. So that can be done as well. Sorry. So to repeat that, sorry? You've got an RMX cluster core infrastructure, Polycom, yep. With link integration, cool. No. I should know that yet. No. Caveat, you may need to upgrade the bridge. If you need to upgrade the bridge, you're willing to be under maintenance. Okay? So you can't get updates from Polycom without maintenance. And so there may be some costs attached to that, but I don't think there's any additional... If you've already done the link integration, I don't think there's any additional costs to make it work. The other caveat is the integration may be technically a little bit difficult to do. Yeah, and my advice is work with a Polycom integrator like ourselves or someone else, or Polycom themselves. Have a link interoperability as a service kind of. They send you an engineer, or he dials in remotely and does the work. I'd definitely look at using someone like that, because it isn't as straightforward as you might hope it would be. But I don't believe there's any additional cost in the actual product. Webcast and live stream? RSS. Like if you already have an RSS, or you don't, and you're a Polycom infrastructure customer, honestly, RSS, and do some homework on Media Manager. I can introduce you to Media Manager. No, it's not. RSS is a subset of, it's the product inside Media Manager. Media Manager is the entire